Support for Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio comes from Roaring Fork Conservancy, the watershed action and education organization in the Roaring Fork Valley, from Aspen to Glenwood and Meredith to Marble, bringing people together to protect our rivers. More at roaringfork.org or 927-1290.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Lorenzo Semple, columnist for the Aspen Daily News, Jill Bethard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. The number of hikers in a certain area in Glenwood Canyon has officials grappling with how to handle the growing crowds and their impacts in the backcountry.
It's 80,000 so far this year, which is a 60% increase from last year.
Meanwhile, the pot industry has government stumped on how to regulate it and minimize its presence in the Roaring Fork Valley.
County attorneys weighed in and said you can legally pull or modify their permit. There's nothing stopping you from doing that.
As elected officials in Snowmass review the Bass Village proposal, traffic issues are a big concern, especially during ski season.
Tom was talking about that pretty extensively the other night, just how to get people moving out of that drop-off area faster.
A bank has started foreclosure proceedings on a downtown Aspen building that has been plagued with problems. And news of the suicide of the man who confessed to killing Aspen native Nancy Pfister came from an unusual source, a public relations firm.
Brought to you by Craigslist, basically, this whole thing, and it's just repulsive.
Finally, my guests reflect on the environmental forum in Snowmass Village that took place this past week. Welcome to Valley Roundup and to the studios at Aspen Public Radio, and Randy down in Glenwood at the Glenwood Post-Independent.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be participating.
Yeah. Thanks.
Pleasure to be here.
Randy, you wrote an editorial about how crowded Hanging Lake has gotten and what some of the solutions could be to curb the amount of people up there. That number that you cited in the editorial shocked me. What was the number of how many visitors go to Hanging Lake?
It's 80,000 so far this year, which is a 60% increase from last year. We had heard CDOT and the Forest Service put a gate in to try to control parking when it's full because they had a lot of illegal parking. And we had heard that the attendants, the Forest Service employees who are staffing that booth at the gate have had a really rough time some days just from abusive people who get impatient waiting on a hot day. It's not staffed every day, so people are parking illegally anyway. So one of my reporters, Will Grandbois, went there on a Wednesday morning, hiked up to the lake. The first thing he saw was two guys out hiking on the log. Apparently they can't read or don't want to read. And, you know, when you go to the lake, it's the parking lot, it's the crowds, and then it's people who bring their dogs, people who think that the rules about, you know, not getting in the water don't apply to them. Even if you go early in the morning, by the time you're going back down, the upper part of the hike, which is a narrow stairway, it reminds me of going up and down an aisle in a Major League Baseball game.
Yeah, I've been there before a long time ago, and it was so crowded even then that I never went back.
Same.
You know, the Forest Service and CDOT and Glenwood Springs Chamber and the city of Glenwood Springs last year really started talking seriously about what to do. And clearly a gate isn't enough. Incremental changes aren't going to be enough. We hear that CDOT's going to decertify that as a safety rest area, you know, a normal interstate rest area, so that will allow the Forest Service to then hire a concessionaire. We editorially suggested banning private vehicles in the high season, sort of like is done with the Maroon Bells hike, and have a shuttle service and you know, require people to get a permit for a window. You know, you can have an early morning permit, a midday permit, an afternoon permit. If you have to do a shuttle ride, you're going to have to listen to some kind of educational talk, and the people who are on the shuttle with you, there'll be some peer pressure to not get in the lake and so forth.
It's like, why do you want to go up there with all those people?
Well, and that's the other question, is as resident, this is not the kind of hike that you would do, although it's ever harder to find solitude.
Maroon Lake, mm-hmm. Conundrum, now we have the North Star Preserve issue, which is, I mean, this is all the same issue, just are the backcountry and our natural resources being used to death. And the North Star Preserve, while it's an ongoing issue about how to control the crowds up there, there was an event planner who got fined for having a wedding party go down that stretch, right?
Yeah, so Friday afternoon, a couple weeks back, we get a call from the Pickens County Open Space Ranger who says, hey, you guys should come out to North Star. There's something going on. There's a float with 70 people on it. And this is in the midst of coming up with a new management plan where they're banning alcohol, and it's been proposed that you go as far to just take a timeout from any sort of recreational use on this property. There's been a huge community conversation about how this resource is being just ruined by overuse. And here you have a commercial group, basically, you know, a wedding group that is paying an organizing company to stage this whole event, going and floating North Star. And it turned out that this event planner.
Who's the event planner?
EKS Events.
They're local. So they know this issue,
They know about this issue. Apparently, the head of the company called the open space department and said, hey, you know, I'd like to do this. My wedding group wants to do this. And, you know, she way lowballed it, said it's going to be like, you know, 25 people. And she was told no. She's like, that violates the restriction on any sort of commercial activity on this river. You know, you being a paid event organizer, this is a commercial event. It's not allowed. Sorry. And according to the report that the Open Space Department filed, she did not like, you know, that outcome and said, can we just pretend this conversation never happened? And went ahead and did it anyway.
And then she got a fine of, what, $1,000?
$1,000.
Do you think that's enough?
I mean, it's how do you scale these things? I mean, I'm sure that she got paid orders of magnitude much more than that to put on this wedding.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. And, you know, the comment was, well, she had this demanding client who wasn't going to take no for an answer, and they were going to do the float no matter what. And, you know,
right.
It was a pretty the incident seemed to say a lot about where we are as a society right now.
I have a confession to make. I've never been to Hanging Lake.
Wow.
I've seen the sign. I've driven by it at high speed multiple times.
It's a beautiful
place. It looks like a real dream.
It is really cool.
And that being said, in light of what's going on up there, I was thinking about putting a T-shirt on that says Aspen and dragging an SUP up there and seeing... just what the fuss is really all about up there. But I think if you look at all these issues that you've all been talking about, whether it's Conundrum, the Maroon Bells, North Star Nature Preserve,
downtown Aspen,
that are being that are being loved to death, I think that there's a silver lining in all this, and that is, yes, these places are mob scenes, and so conventional wisdom would say avoid mob scenes. And as a result of these places being so crowded all the time, the effect on the other surrounding wilderness areas, it's that they are deserted.
Obviously, Hanging Lake is popular because it's off the interstate, but it's also been written about, it's more advertised, right, Randy?
There's that, and, you know, social media now makes it easy to share what the reward is. I mean, it seems like an easy hike for people. It's not at very high altitude, and, you know, there couldn't be a trailhead that's easier to get to. And the other thing is that the Interior Department in 2011 made it a national landmark of some type. The exact wording escapes me. So it was pretty widely publicized.
That's the issue also with the 14ers around here. They're so publicized on social media, then you get, you know, novices coming up here and trying to do Pyramid or the Bells, and then they have to get plucked off with a Blackhawk.
Yeah, the 14ers have become a junk show. The last time I did a 14er, I passed a guy carrying a golf club.
Really?
And then another guy carrying a bag of Doritos. Not so, I mean, this is indicative of where we are with the wilderness experience in Colorado on some level.
I guess.
And with places,
it's
like
sad.
It is sad, but the once again, the thing you have to celebrate is that these are people that are out enjoying what Colorado has to offer. And, you know, when they turn right, you turn left.
I mean, the goal of designating something like Hanging Lake as a national landmark is to so that people will visit it and see how special it is. So if you're going to give it that designation, then you should treat it with some, you know, more precautions to keep it from getting trampled.
Well, you know, the Interior Department gave it that designation, and it's really CDOT's problem to deal with its rest area, and then the Forest Service controls the upper part of that. So it would be a little bit like me telling everybody to go to Aspen so that you guys have to deal with the traffic.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Lorenzo Semple, columnist for the Aspen Daily News, Jill Bethard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. In other Glenwood news, Randy, are they done refining their rules on pot or what?
There's one more reading, but it appears what they're going to do is pretty dramatically increase the distance required between stores from, I think it was 325 feet to 900 feet. What that does is has the effect of freezing the number of stores in the downtown area, which a lot of residents got activated about and went to the council when there were applications for some new stores that have since been turned down. And then they're also going to, instead of it being an administrative rules review, there has to be a special review every time that will go to planning and zoning in the city council. So it's a more rigorous and more political process at this point. And I think that the council feels like it has been responsive to how the community reacted. I don't think that the council wants to shut down the stores that are in place. There was one option before them that would have banned stores downtown, including those already here. There's a proposal working its way through the process for a second grow operation on Devereaux, which is a really industrial area by the railroad track and by the river. And, you know, we'll see if that one is approved.
And that brings me up Valley to Holland Hills. And there's some issues there still with Silver Peak Apothecary grow operation and the neighbors there being really upset about the smell. And, you know, the commissioners, I think, are kind of floundering around trying to figure out how to deal with this.
You saw a really interesting acknowledgement. So basically the county commissioners have given High Valley Farms and Silver Peak Apothecary and basically a month. You know, this has been going on for a long time. There have been complaints about the smell from this residential neighborhood where you have this, what is it, 40,000 some odd square feet? Yeah. I mean, it's a huge pot grow. And it's pretty much in a residential neighborhood. It was really controversial when it was approved. A lot of people felt that this is the wrong place for this type of thing. You should, you know, put it out in these...
Woody Creek, maybe, where the other one was proposed?
You know, put it someplace where it's a little more industrial or a little, you know, further away from the neighbors. And sure enough, you know, the 2,000 pot plants there smell. And it's causing a lot of headaches among some of the neighbors. And this has been an ongoing complaint. You know, they keep saying, oh, we're trying these, you know, they always have some new system they're about to implement, which is going to solve the problem.
But then it doesn't. And then
so far, nothing has worked. And so basically, their license is up for renewal on September 23rd. And the county has said, if you don't fix this, you're done. We are not going to renew your license. You know, he's now going to, like, his last ditch option. You know, it's this, like, you know, pot smell kryptonite apparently it's the same system they use on cruise ships. For the garbage holds, so they don't stink up the entire cruise ship. It's who knows what kind of gnarly chemicals are going on with that, but this is like their last ditch option, and we'll see if it works. He has a month.
Now that pot is legal, there's this whole blatancy of no one cares about the smell because it's legal now, but that's not the case. You want to be as discreet as possible, and this new phenomenon of just being able to smell pot everywhere, I think, is very problematic.
I'm surprised if you look back when they approved that facility in Holland Hills. It's in a residential neighborhood. Then you had the guy from Green Dragon, Ron Ratke. He tried to get a grow operation in Woody Creek, mm-hmm. and they shut him down. And that's far less populated than Holland Hills. You know, and the county has found itself like, you know, for one of the first governments having to deal with this issue. I find it interesting that I don't think they want to be the first.
Well, you know, it's not the only thing that stinks. I mean, natural gas stinks, hog farms stink. Not that we have many, you know, feedlots stink in Colorado, and people have put up with those for a long time. So I think that Pitkin County is being a little bit hypocritical here in that it approved this, and now it's washing its hands of it after approving what is a really large investment by what in this state is a legal business. I think that, you know, legally, is there a precedent here for people who are opposed to other sorts of I don't know.
The county attorney has
weighed
in. I think
it's fraught with some real problem.
The county attorney has weighed in and said you can legally pull or modify their permit. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. You had a really interesting comment from Commissioner Steve Childs, who he was fairly sympathetic to the marijuana businesses historically, and he said, gosh, this thing, we should have capped this at half of its size when we approved it. That was a mistake to allow it to be this big. I mean, you know, that's, you know, perhaps a day late and a dollar short, but that was a pretty remarkable comment to hear from an elected official.
You know, Aspen's grappling with, you know, a lot of things too related to marijuana. And, you know, the first time that I can remember, Aspen doesn't want to be first in trying things like pot clubs. You know, like, where are you supposed to smoke this or consume pot if you can't do it in public and you can't do it where you're staying? So this issue of, you know, can we get, you know, a coffee shop that sells pot too? And the city has been adamant, like, we are not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Let somebody else do it first. So I think all the governments are kind of fumbling around with this issue all over the state, I'm sure. Jill? Snowmass, there was a base village review on traffic, and the substance of it was, to me, very boring, but the people who were reviewing it continued to capture my attention. So, Mark E. Butler, the mayor, obviously is not recusing herself from this review, so just give us a little update on backstory and update real quick.
Yeah, this meeting was fairly quiet as far as all the fireworks go. You know, she has asked Chris Jacobson to step down from his position as a councilman in light of some DUI arrest from June, and he responded by saying he would not step down and that he believed she should recuse herself from the Base Village Review because she's the executive director of a nonprofit that accepts donations from the applicant, Related Colorado, Aspen Skiing Company, which is also involved, and he named a lot of other people.
Right.
Neither of them said anything about either of those topics this week.
Right.
It was fairly quiet, but I doubt it will stay that way.
A recall effort is underway for him. And, you know, I found it interesting that the town attorney for Snowmass won't comment on this. I asked him what his position is. And he said, I'm not going to tell you. If she comes to me, then great, I'll give her my advice. And I don't know if she has sought his advice or not.
Not publicly. Right. Not in a public meeting. And he told me the same thing. Yeah, I find that interesting since normally that's the guy you go to with the question of conflict of interest.
Yeah.
I still think we need to find out how much money was donated here and do a little research there to see if you can make a case that there was some...
That she's influenced by...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it was just...
That's our job. Somebody should be doing this.
I know, right?
The real story to me about traffic at the Base Village is the horror show that is the drop-off area at the Base Village. And no one, this is like, people are just flat out scared to even acknowledge this. That's how bad it is.
If you have
ever dropped off a kid at the treehouse, it is probably the most unpleasant ski-related experience. It's so bad that they have to have people in vests out there. And these people just take a beating all day. It really illuminates the fact that the Base Village was both designed by and created by people who have A, never seen snow before, and B, never skied or put kids in ski school. It is really, that is the big problem that they should address there. There are literally four drop-off parking spots for Snowmass, which is the busiest of all the ski areas and does the lion's share of all the Ski Co. business. And then they put four parking spots for people to drop off. So I'd like to see some talk about that personally.
I mean, let's not forget, though, that this was originally SkiCo's project. So the original design was SkiCo was involved in. So people who should know what they're doing. But the town was talking about that pretty extensively the other night, just how to get people moving out of that drop-off area faster. I think part of the problem is getting them through the intersection below so that Carriageway Road is not backing up to there. But there's also a problem, as you say, of people, they park in those spaces that are supposed to be loading spaces, and they get out and they walk their kids up and they don't handle it the way it's supposed to be handled. And that's probably more on SkiCo.
Well, how are you supposed to handle it? I mean, don't you just, you want to walk your kid up to the...
I would agree, but that's not what that space has been designed for. Somebody...
But is there any... Is there a space... Is there a designated space for you to park and walk your kid to
the
base?
Yeah, but it's a pretty limited number, right?
It is just...
It's the garage.
It is just a horrible design.
It's the garage. They want you in the garage.
No, they want you... If you're going to Treehouse, they want you parking outside Treehouse. But you're supposed to just swing through and drop people off.
Throw the kid out the door? Like, just kick him out of the car and go, you know, go with the hundreds of people.
You'll find him.
So Snowmass is having a tough time with transportation issues. I mean, the whole thing is designed in such a weird way that there's no, you know, there's no easy solutions here. I heard someone the other day suggest that we need a gondola from the rodeo lot to Base Village.
Some Skittles on steroids?
You know, just what Snowmass needs, another chairlift to nowhere.
One of the biggest headlines last week was Nancy Pfister's killer decided to commit suicide in jail. And how we found out about it is the interesting part to me, which was a PR firm. Curtis,
Nancy Styler, who at one point was accused of the murder of Nancy Pfister, but walked free when her husband confessed and said he did it alone.
Despite the fact that her cell phone pinged up there.
She's writing a book called Guilt by Matrimony. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. And her publicist for this book is the one who alerted the media to the fact that her husband had hung himself in jail. So, I mean, this whole thing, you know, no one really... It just adds to the sense of we'll never really know the truth. And you know, justice is pretty elusive.
Sad, creepy... You know, brought to you by Craigslist, basically, this whole thing. And it's just repulsive.
Right, because they were renters and she found them, you know, by advertising.
She found them in a bar. Right.
I got to say, when I read that, it's embarrassing to admit, but when I read that the guy committed suicide, I had some sense of relief or justice or, I mean, it's...
I had the opposite sense, just because, you know, now
you want them just rot there.
And we'll never know.
I mean, what a dark end to your life. I mean, how old was he? 60? No, he's 70.
67,
right? 67, okay. I was thinking he was older than that, actually. But
he looks older than that.
He does, and he probably wouldn't have had long to live. He wasn't very healthy, and, I mean, just what a dark end to your life, you know? We found guilty of murder. A year later, you hang yourself. I mean...
Yeah.
Doesn't get much creepier than that.
No. So the high-profile building in downtown Aspen has just had so much controversy about it regarding the penthouse owners complaining about noise to them not letting the affordable housing people there in that building use the front door. And there's been lots of financial trouble with the owners of the building, and now they're being foreclosed on.
It's really too bad that what used to be the La Cocina restaurant. I mean, this was before my time, but apparently this was like the best place in Aspen to go get some enchiladas.
Number five.
Once again, it's like a parable for our entire society.
So
the fact they're being foreclosed on is probably the least surprising news I've heard in a long time. This was a highly leveraged investment. They basically went all in on some condos and it hasn't really worked out.
Well, and this is how it led to the whole lawsuit with the city, which was they were desperate to make their money back.
And they had to sell these condos to make anything back, and they were having a hard time. It was in the middle of the recession. Along comes this couple who says, well, we're not really interested unless we can have the elevator all to ourselves. So there you go.
Right. So they represented, you can have it.
Yeah, here we are.
And I wrote an editorial basically saying, like, hey, what do we want in a resort town, hotels or high-end retail with penthouses on top? Mm-hmm. My kind of point was, hey, you don't see stories in the paper saying, for example, hotel guest in room 132 sues city of Aspen.
Right.
You do see these ongoing docudramas of people involved in these, mm-hmm. you know, right. basically a trap of expensive rent, et cetera, a revolving door of high-end retail stores that none of us really bat an eye at. With the penthouse on top where the people might live there, might not, it's unclear, you know, and the real sad thing is what Curtis said, is what, how far it's gone. It's gone from one end of the spectrum, La Cocina, to the other extreme, which is, you know, penthouses and lawsuits, so.
Right, and so that building will be auctioned off on the courthouse steps.
How does that affect the rest of the building, the people that live there, the affordable housing units?
The attorney that I talked to, who didn't want to go on the record, said they're not really interested in kicking people out.
Well, the deed restriction survives the foreclosure.
Right.
So nothing's going to happen
right.
to those affordable
So houses. What happens to the commercial space is to be known.
It would get a new landlord.
Lightning round? Anybody have a lightning round, or are we good?
I do. I was up at Our Day in Snowmass this week, and I actually wish I could have spent more time there, because there was a lot of smart people walking around. But yeah, that's one of those events, I think, after Ideas Fest and Security Forum, we all kind of glaze over like, oh, it's another Ideas type of event. But it was pretty cool to sit in there and listen to people talk. There's a UN conference on climate change in December, and a lot of the people who will be attending that were there this week. And then there are a lot of people from the private sector. I mean, I watched a deal get done on Wednesday between an ethanol fuel company and a company that can help them get their fuel into diesel engines. So it was really cool to watch that happen. And, you know, one of them came up to me afterwards and said, you know, that's how business gets things done. You know, you've got all these climate change leaders and discussing things and talking about things, and they won't ever really get a legally binding agreement between countries. But, you know, private sector gets things done as well.
What about the release of Grizzly Reservoir water into the rivers, making the whole thing basically look like worse than runoff? That to me
that
was pretty alarming. I think the people who manage the reservoir could have done a far better job of releasing that in some kind of a more controlled way, instead of just kicking up all that sediment or releasing it. That seemed a little suspicious. And then the comment in the paper where they said, hey, we're not in the business of sending any water to Aspen, that was pretty illuminating. And that mindset.
For those that don't know, Grizzly Reservoir is the main storage tank for water that is diverted from the western slope to Colorado Springs. And, they claim, basically what happened was a tree got stuck in one of their gates that sends water. I'm not sure if it's either down the Roaring Fork or over to the other side, but they had some problem and they were worried about the safety of the dam. And so they basically let all the water out of Grizzly as fast as they could so they could assess this situation.
It comes on the heels of the Animas River in Durango, and that whole toxic spill.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. To be clear, is much, much, much worse.
Supposedly, that's toxic chemicals, and what's in our water is not, right?
Right.
Just mud and silt.
Right. Supposedly. All right, well, good. Thank you guys for taking the time and coming in, and Randy down in Glenwood.
Thanks. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Jill Bethard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Lorenzo Semple, columnist for the Aspen Daily News, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.